If you have a financial question for Pega Bruce, you can call this number 24/7, 888-6-ADVICE. You can also email those questions to yourmoney@wealthenhancement.com. But you can also call our text and studio line, too, right now, in fact, 651-461-9226. 651-461-9226. Right now, here's Senior Vice President, Financial Advisor Peg Webb, and the founder of Wealth Enhancement Group, Financial Advisor Bruce Helmer. Good morning to you both.
Good morning, Denny. Good morning, Bruce.
Hello, Peg. Hello, Denny Long. Good to be with you both. Hello, listeners. Glad that we have you with us today as well. Hey, Denny and listeners, Peg and I today are going to talk a little bit about saving for education, saving for college, and specifically, we're going to take a little bit of a deep dive into the so-called 529 college savings plans. And we've talked about these on the show many times in the past, but recently there's been some changes, or I might even say improvements, that these plans actually have more flexibility, and I think they're more consumer friendly than they've ever been. But Peg, maybe before we get into 529 plans, let's talk about the challenge that people face just paying for higher education. And it doesn't even necessarily have to mean college. It could mean trade school or whatever your post-high school education or preparation for a job, preparation for life is. This is really expensive, and this is for parents. You know, I tell parents all the time, Peg, if you can't totally pay for your kids' college, don't feel bad. Don't feel guilty. All you can do is all you can do. And most people can't do that. It doesn't make you a bad person. Doesn't make you a bad parent. It's expensive. Peg?
Yeah, we have often talked about on the show, Bruce, a comparison of when we went to college versus what kids have to do today to pay to go to college. And I just want to remind listeners, you know, you and I are, I wouldn't really call us over the hill type of people, but we're, you know, closer to over the hill. So it's been a while, right, since we've had to pay for college. But I remember you and I talking about, I worked at a pickle factory in the summer, and I worked 12-hour shifts, and I earned $3,000 for that summer, and that was what my tuition cost, you know, for the year. So I was able to get a summer job, you know, pay for that. And so today, there's no way, because the 2023-2024 average for tuition and fees is north of $30,000. And so it ends up to be really expensive. Now, that's a four-year public school. So when we start to get into the numbers, Bruce, about what does college really cost, it's hard to quantify. You know, you've got the room and board, you've got the tuition, you've got all these added expenses. And I think some of the articles or some of the facts that are out there, they tend to make it seem like it's a little bit better than it is. But what we do know is that college costs have increased 2 to 3 times above the rate of inflation. And the question is, why? Why is it just so expensive? And I've always been, it's a pet peeve of mine when you go on the campuses, just the deluxe buildings that they have. And now with COVID happening in the past, it seems that it's more prevalent to maybe not have to go to campus and to take classes. And do you remember, Bruce, when that wasn't as big of an option as it is today?
No, absolutely. And, you know, I guess you could also debate the point, though, whether the quality of the education, if the student is sitting at home on a computer screen, is equal to if they're physically there in person. I know it was tough for a lot of kids that had to do remote learning, both, you know, maybe their last couple of years of high school or their first couple of years of college, back when we were in the shelter in place at the height of the pandemic. And I'm grateful that I wasn't a parent having a kid having to go through that then. But, you know, the other thing, Peg, and again, I think sometimes people hear these costs and maybe they throw up their hands and say, what's the point? I can never do it. But again, you know, you don't have to be able to pay for all of it. Maybe you can help. maybe you can reduce the size of the student loans that your child is going to leave college with. All you can do is all you can do. And that's what we'll ultimately segue in today is what are some of the things you can do to ease some of that burden. But I think, Peg, also we get into the question of, with this tremendous cost, is it worth it? And I don't want to get too far afield today and go down roads that we don't have in our outline. But I think that the statistics or the data still suggests that if you're a college graduate, on average, you command a higher salary. You're able to get jobs easier and so forth. So it for a lot of people, despite the intimidating cost, it probably still is worth it to get that education. But the other thing is, and again, I know I'm deviating a little bit. I'm just what comes in my brain comes out my mouth sometimes. But the pet peeve here for me is the ripple effects of this tremendous cost. And we've talked about it on the show on many occasions. We're not going to necessarily go down that road today. But we've talked about the sandwich generation, where we have a generation of baby boomers, people about our age and whatnot, where we can't get our kids launched, so we have expenses related to our kids, and maybe we also have expenses related to aging parents. But these education costs, helping our kids with education or to pay back student loans, has a huge ripple effect on the economy, and it has an effect on our ability to save for our own retirement. Because if we're helping our kids, that's less money than we have for our retirement. So now, are we going to run out of money when we retire? Or are we delaying when we're going to be able to retire? So this is really a big issue. This is not, if you're out there listening thinking, I don't have kids or my kids are launched, this doesn't impact me. I think it may not impact you as directly as if you still have to educate kids. But I think this impacts everyone. Peg?
Yeah, I want to go back to something you said where the kids had to do their learning, remote. Well, in today's world, I mean, no one wants to go back to the office, right? So they're transitioning into a company, and it might be their first job, and they have a remote job. So I feel like, and I just want to make this point, a big general point is, things are changing, and I feel like they're changing fast. And now with AI kind of right on our heels, and it's been around for a long time, but it's on our heels, I think, more so consumer-wise. And so we want to keep this in mind. And the reason I bring this up is because of the 529s. Like, clients are asking us, should I really be funding these things? I mean, what is college and education going to look like in the future? I don't know that, but one of the things you mentioned, and it hit me when you mentioned it, is the thing that we have with our clients is it's amazing, but they want to help their kids to the degree where they might have their retirement. They have to work longer. They don't care if they have to use part of their IRA to fund these kids' college. I mean, I think that the whole college and college experience, there's a time frame there where it's almost like the kids felt bad if they didn't go to college. And so then we had all these kids going to college, and maybe they really wanted to go to trade school or something else, but there was kind of this push to get all these kids in college. So one of the things that we see is, when it comes to taking care of your own retirement, and you've got your IRAs, and you maybe didn't have a separate bucket of money for, sending the kids to college, you can go borrow money for college. But you can't borrow money against your retirement account. So banks aren't going to give you loans because you have an IRA. An IRA is a special instrument that the government really watches over, and rightfully so, because they want to make sure that you have enough money to retire one day. You can always help your kids down the road with school loans. So let's say they qualify for school loans and you're able to get some money that they can borrow. Maybe then after they experience or get done with college, then you could help them pay for school loans. And that's a little bit more drawn out on a year-to-year basis versus just upfront taking money out of your account and helping the kids. The other thing is it's very difficult today with interest rates high and the ability to be able to borrow money, just even borrow money on your house or some any asset that you have, and you go to the bank and they say, okay, it's 8.5% or something. Well, that's a terrible number when you're trying to help your kid, and then that interest gets to be compounded and that kind of thing. So we kind of walk through our clients, what's the best approach? And in many cases, Bruce, it's not the parents we're talking to, it's the grandparents, and they want to help out. Bruce?
Oh, that's a great point that you closed with. Well, everything you just said was a great point, but the idea of grandparents, and I'll segue kind of into 529s. So let's say, you know, understanding that that these costs are very, very significant, but you as a parent or as a grandparent want to try to help your grandkids or your kids. And Peg, the vast majority of the 529s that I've done in my career have been grandma and grandpa, not mom and dad. Let's talk about these 529s, because in terms of saving for education, and again, it doesn't have to be college. The definition of a 529, there's advantages if the proceeds are used for, I think it says, quote, higher education. That could mean a trade school. That could mean, I've told the story before, I had a client use it to get a master gardener designation, and that was fine. So let's talk about how consumer-friendly these plans are now and why the 529 is probably, if you're someone that is going to help your child or your grandchild with education, why the 529 might be the most attractive option and the improvements that have been made on the 529. Peg?
Yes, the first thing is tax advantages. The contributions are after-tax money, so you're not going to get a deduction for putting it in. But if you follow the terms of the 529, they can go federally tax-free. And then when you pull the money out, you don't pay tax. But then there's also a bunch of states. There's like 30-some states that will also give you a partial tax benefit when you take the money out. So the other thing is, you mentioned that you could use it for other things than college. So you can use up to $10,000 for private, public, or religious elementary or secondary schools. That's actually fairly recent. And then this is a newer one where you can take up to $10,000 for paying off student loans. So that's new. And then the other thing, they just put the SECURE Act of 2022. I don't know. This, to me, I wasn't like jumping up and down. But beginning this year, 2024, if you have a 529 and you no longer need the funds for educational expenses, you can move up to $35,000 to a beneficiary Roth IRA. And it's subject to yearly limits. So in 2024, you can do $7,000. But here's the kind of gotcha, Bruce. I mean, you know this, but you have to have the 529 has to be open for 15 years. And then the beneficiary must have earned income equal to what's being transferred each year. That's 7,000, and then it goes 8,000. That makes it a little bit tougher because, yes, there's people out there that have 529s for 15 years, but let's face it, 14% of the people eligible to do a 529, there's only 14% of the people that even have a 529. So I feel like they shouldn't have made it that difficult to be able to transition. But the good news is, just like you said, you can change beneficiary. So if I changed it to if I had my granddaughter as a beneficiary, I could take her off and put someone else on. And I could, you know, I like the flexibility of being able to do that. And here's the great news, though. You know how Roth IRAs traditional IRAs, they make us take money out and pay tax on it, or they want us to get a Roth out of the plan. The great news with 529s is there is no date. So you can continue to have this compounding and rolling. And so there isn't a date where it says, okay, when you reach age 80 or 100 or whatever, that you have to pull those dollars out. Bruce?
Yeah, and, you know, I agree, Peg. There is some gotchas in that Roth conversion thing, but I still think that makes it a little bit more investor or consumer friendly than it was. Because you even at the outset talked about, should I even invest in these things? What if my kid doesn't have post-high school education? Well, now that money could end up in that kid's hands in the form of a Roth IRA, provided you jump through the hoops that you mentioned. Let's go back a little bit, Peg. Some people, again, might not even be familiar with the concept of the 529. What are they actually investing in? And talk a little bit about how each state has their own plan. So for someone listening right now that said, yeah, I like this idea of a 529, how do I get one? It's not that easy. There's a lot of them to choose from. How do you do your due diligence? How do you know what to invest in? How do you know what state plan to use and so on? Talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, first of all, I'd probably get help because I find it very confusing, even because when you have not just a national offering, like 529 national, that each state directs their own 529, and each state then hires someone to create the 529 for the state, and then they incorporate in these diverse options for investing, like mutual funds, and some of them have these age-based portfolios where as you get older, it gets less aggressive. But the big deal is some of the states, and why it's important that you do your homework, is some of the states that you reside in give you some additional tax deduction, some deductibility when you put your deposits in. And there's all sorts of rules and regulations around that, too. But if you qualify within your state, you may want to definitely invest in the one that where you're domiciled. The other reason, though, is we encourage people and we do the work for them is the cost efficiency of the 529. Because when there's layers of government, federal and state, it tends to get a little bit more expensive. So a 529, we encourage our clients and we do the homework on, well, what's the most cost effective one out there, meaning all the fees that might be charged for that. So I think the flexibility of them, and then I want to go back to funding it, because I think one of the big points is, and why what we see is that clients have high net worth, and they may pay taxes, and it might be death taxes. They're not worried about their taxes today, but they're worried about when they die and if Uncle Sam's going to take a chunk out of their inheritance for their family. Is you can contribute $18,000 per beneficiary, and the IRS allows us to do 5 years up front. And then if you have if you're married filing jointly, you can do double that. So you could do $36,000, you know, each year, and you could do $180,000 today and deposit it into a 529 and you could say, I'm done with it now. The only negative to that, Bruce, is that you can't die within those 5 years, because if you do, then the IRS could pull that back into your estate. But grandparents like that as kind of a one or done, or maybe it's kind of a family 529 in their mind, because they can continue to change beneficiaries as they wish. Bruce?
Yeah, and a couple points here. And Denny, I know we're getting close to the end of the first half. A couple things, again, that people need to understand. And Peg, you mentioned that because of some of the tax advantages, you may want to invest in a 529 in the state in which you live. One of the things that we do for our clients, again, doing this alone can be complicated and confusing. We'll do the work for you based on our client's circumstances. We'll help them pick what we think is the best 529. So as Peg mentioned, you have to look at those internal costs. And when you look at the costs, you might say, well, why should I do this at all? Why wouldn't I just do a regular investment where the expense drag or the costs are lower? Well, the tax advantage of the 529 might offset or more than offset the extra cost, giving the investor a better net-net. But you can live in the state of Minnesota, you can go to school in Arizona or California, and your 529 could be from the state of Virginia. But we help you pick the best plan and the best way to invest based on the circumstances. And the other thing, again, is control. If we didn't make it obvious yet, the 529, the grandchild or the child is the beneficiary, but mom and dad or grandma and grandpa still own that account, and they still have control over it. So it's not like you're giving them a minor control of all this money. So for education specifically, there's just so many things to like about a 529, and I think they're more user-friendly than they've ever been. There's still obviously some restrictions, some hoops to jump through, some things to be aware of. But I guess the overall message, for education, it's a great way to invest. Don't try to do this alone. And then, Peg, when we come back from break, we'll kind of tie a bow on this topic of paying for education and specifically the 529. And Denny, in the second half, we'll let listeners take us most of the way through the second half.
Absolutely, Bruce. We will do that. And here's the way to do a couple of ways to do it, actually. You can either call or text our studio line. Here's the number to do either, 651-461-9226. It can be a phone call or it can be a text. Either way, 651-461-9226. We'll take this break and be back on the other side with more of your money. If you do have a financial question for Peg or Bruce, you can call this number 24/7, 888-6-ADVICE. You can also email those questions to yourmoney@wealthenhancement.com. But right now, you can call or text our studio line, and we urge you to do so, at 651-461-9226. Again, you can call or text right now, 651-461-9226. Once again, here's Senior Vice President, Financial Advisor Peg Webb, along with the founder of Wealth Enhancement Group, Financial Advisor Bruce Helmer.
Thank you, Denny Long. Listeners, that was the docile tone and legendary voice of the legendary Denny Long. Thank you, Denny, for being with us this week. If you joined us late, Peg and I have been talking about funding education, and specifically, we've kind of taken a deep dive into the so-called 529 college savings plans. I think Peg and I are in agreement that in terms of saving for education, they are potentially the most efficient, effective way to do the saving for education. There's some pitfalls to be aware of. There's some complexities. It's not always necessarily easy to figure these things out and how to maximize your efficiency. But financial advisors like us or other advisors might be able to help you navigate those waters. And Peg, before we get to listeners, and I know we've got texts and questions coming in, a couple more things, though, that we wanted to hit with regard to the pros and cons or reasons to open a 529 or the things to be aware of or potential pitfalls. And one of those is how it might affect the student's ability to get financial assistance. Peg?
Yes, I talked a little bit about it in the beginning about, financial aid, but I talked more so about how expensive college is. So there still is student aid available. And in 2022 to 2023, undergrads received an average of almost $16,000 in financial aid. So when clients come to us and we talk about these 529s, we have to be careful because 529 can count against your financial aid. So there's three different kind of parties that have to watch out, one being the family. So the family can contribute to the financial ability for the kid to go to college, but they percentage-wise, 5.64% of their ability to pay for it will hurt your financial aid eligibility. This is kind of interesting. If you're the student and you're contributing your own money, 20% of your own money will hurt your financial aid. Here's the big news, though. I mean, this is huge. So there's that FAFSA form, the free application for federal student aid. And they're the people that when you fill out the form, you know, you got to put all the assets you have and what your kid has as far as assets. And also, if the grandparents were going to give money, then it was up to 50% that would not be eligible. So let's say the grandparent gave $10,000, $5,000 would not be able to be given, you know, without a penalty. So that in 2024 to 2025 academic year, that went into play, which is huge, because we just said in the show, the people we're working with are normally the grandparents who have extra wherewithal to help with college, and the ability to use 529 funds and not have it be detrimental to how much you could get for financial aid is huge. So I wanted to make sure, Bruce, that we made that point today, because that's a very recent change.
Yeah, and that is, I'm glad you brought that up, Peg. And the last word I have, and then I'll see if you have anything you want to add, and we can get listeners involved. But, you know, when all these things that we as financial advisors talk to clients about, all these good ideas, you should do an IRA, you should do a Roth IRA, you should do a 529, you should have life insurance, you should have this, you know, all these things that we advise, we recognize that people don't have unlimited quantities of money, and they have to prioritize in terms of what's most important for them. And I'm reminded of someone that asked me one time, they literally said, am I better off getting a Roth IRA or a 529 plan? And I said, well, it's kind of up to your priorities. They do very different things in your financial world. The 529 is for higher education, probably not for you, but probably for your kids. And a Roth IRA is for your retirement. So, you know, what's more important to you? And I can't decide the client's priorities for them. But I did tell this person, look, if you can't help your kid with their education, doesn't make you a bad parent, doesn't make you a bad person. If they really are motivated, they'll find a way to get that education. They might have student loans, but they can get that education. But if you don't save for your own retirement, nobody's going to help you. There's no recourse of action unless you go to your kids and they give you money when you're retired because they were so financially successful because you helped them get that education. But I wouldn't count on that. So again, this is a good idea for education. Peg already mentioned only about 14% of the people actually do these. I think that number could get higher as people understand them better. But again, we recognize there's not an infinite amount of money and people have to make decisions and prioritize. But if you have the economic wherewithal to assist your child or your grandchild with their education, 529 plan can be a very efficient vehicle. Peg, last thoughts before we go to listeners?
Well, I wanted just to give an example. One of my clients recently has $90,000 in this 529, and they have exhausted, like, the family tree is very small, very small. And so they put, let's just, for example, say the money contributed was half. We put this in a long time ago, and it's doubled. And where now she wants to take the money out. Well, you've got, they're a Minnesota resident, so you've got federal tax, you've got Minnesota tax, and you've got 10% penalty on all the earnings. So that would be $45,000 that would also have a 10% penalty. So you have to give it some thought. You have to commit to it. The other point I want to make is there's a lot of lower income parents and grandparents out there that they might be better off just going and buying a portfolio of stocks or a basket of stocks in a mutual fund or something, because they may not even have to pay capital gains on taking the money out. So when I talk about that 14%, that's just everybody out there. There's a bunch of people that maybe wouldn't do a 529 because there are other tax advantage ways that they could save for college. Hence our job, Bruce. We have to look at all the possibilities and then narrow it down to, you know, what your family situation is and how things would be impacted both financial aid-wise and tax-wise.
Peg, that's a great last point, and I'm glad you brought it up. And I have, on many occasions over the years, I don't want to say I talked somebody out of a 529, but when I presented the alternative options, And maybe an investment portfolio that's not in a 529 doesn't have the potential tax advantage, but it might get higher returns in part because you have more flexibility in what you invest in. You have a smaller expense drag or lower investment costs, and you have more flexibility. And if you end up not wanting to use that money for education, but using it for something else, there's not a bunch of hoops you have to jump through. So yes, you're right. Even people that think they're escrowing money for education, they might end up using it for education. If something happens that they want to use it for something else, it's hard to quantify the advantage of having that flexibility, which has always been one of my problems or issues, with 529. So they're more flexible now than they've ever been, but they're still not as flexible. It's just a straight investment portfolio with no strings attached. Denny, before we get listeners involved, I want to go back to something from last week. Peg, you'll recall this. We had a question last week about a life estate, and I struggled like crazy. I was having a brain schism. I was like, well, life estates have basically been replaced by a different strategy now, and I couldn't think of what it was. I got done with the show, didn't even think about it again. My routine is to go out for a walk after the show, and I'm out in the middle of my walk, and it hit me what I was trying to think of during the show. So the question was about a life estate, and what I was trying to reference and couldn't think of is what's called a transfer on death deed. So both a life estate and a transfer on death deed are tools that can transfer property to somebody upon your death. But the distinction between the two, a life estate allows you to transfer property while you retain an interest during your lifetime. And so it's like you have a partner, it's you and someone else. And then once someone passes, then the life estate passes or the property passes totally to the other partner. The transfer on death deed allows you to retain full ownership during your lifetime, and then you pass the interest to the grantee or the beneficiary if you pass away. But during your lifetime, the grantee has no interest. And I'd said, Peg, that I think these transfer on death deeds have largely replaced life estates because they're more straightforward and they're simpler and there's not as many complexities. There still may be a case where life estate is appropriate, particularly if you're concerned about having to apply for Medicaid or medical assistance in the near future. But I think, and again, I'm not an attorney, and Peg, you correct me if you have a different perspective, I think the transfer on death deed has largely replaced what attorneys years ago used to draft, the life estate deed, have largely been replaced by the newer, probably more efficient transfer on death deed. And I just did a horrifically bad job of answering that question on the show last week, and it hit me literally about an hour and a half after the show while I was out walking, and I wanted to come back and address that. Peg, any thoughts on that before we go to listeners?
No, other than thank you for doing that, because I wasn't of any help last week either. And in the middle of the week, you said, Peg, okay, I did it. I got the answer, so I didn't pay any attention. But thank you for doing that.
No, I did such a bad job last week. I didn't want to leave it. I hope whoever asked the question was listening and heard the correct answer today. All right, Denny, let's let listeners take us home.
Absolutely. Here's the number to either phone in or text in your question, 651-461-9226. Bruce and Peg, here's the one that you get all the time, and I know we've addressed it in the past shows over the years. Can a 529 be applied toward a trade school instead of a college?
Yeah, great question. Peg, 529, higher education doesn't just mean college.
Right. It used to be definitely much more stringent on what you'd use a 529 for, but trade school, absolutely, hands down, you can use it for trade school.
Yeah, and a lot of the expenses associated with education. So that might include if you have to buy a laptop, your books, the definition is pretty liberal. My joke always is that it does not include beer and pizza. I think it should, but it is very liberal in terms of what can qualify as a qualifying expense for quote-unquote higher education. And And in some cases, as you said in the first half of the show, Peg, it might even be private high school or spiritual school. It doesn't even have to be post high school. I think it used to be, but I think that's one of the changes we've seen over the years on 529s, that they've really broadened the definition of things that you can use those proceeds for and still get the tax advantage. Danny?
The couple questions I get, Bruce, is can I use it for a car so that my the child can get around? Absolutely not. And then the other one is, their dinners out and things that, you can use the food program, but you can't go dining in restaurants and actually, use those either. So those were two things that I've heard recently, and they were a no.
All right, very good. Let's go to the phones. I think we have a caller from Woodbury, Minnesota. Greg is calling in this morning. Greg, what is your question for Peg and Bruce?
Well, I had a comment about the transfer on death deed and the life estate. First of all, the transfer on death deed is being used more and more because it keeps people out of having to go to probate. Couples come in and they say, I don't want to go to probate. They have beneficiaries for all of their other investments, their stocks, their 401ks, but that leaves the real estate. And if you don't have somebody to sign a real estate deed, you have no choice but to go to the probate court to get a personal representative deed. The transfer on death deed allows the parties to skip that upon the second to die, and it automatically transfers, which is the benefit. The second benefit is that they do retain ownership, because if they do have to sell it for their long-term care or for some other benefits, then they can have those resources available to them. The downside to the life estate is that you've actually transferred the property, let's say, to your children. You're now subject to the 5-year, 60-month look-back period that someone does have if someone does need medical assistance, and you have that party also who has the life estate that can be valued by medical assistance for a particular value, and that can offset their benefits for medical assistance. And those benefits then can either be reduced or there still can be a lien placed against that particular property. So I hope that helps a little bit.
Thank you, Greg. I assume you're an attorney? Oh, we lost him. All right. Well, that was a lot better and a lot more specific than my answer. Thank you, Greg, for contributing to the show. That was excellent.
All right. Here's another question. Getting a lot of grandparent questions from grandparents today. Can you use 529 plans to pay for grandchildren's private school tuition for K-12?
Yeah, Peg. I know it does not have to necessarily be post high school education. I know it can be earlier than that, but how early can it go? I'm not sure where they draw the line. Peg?
I don't know of any age. I mean, it's if you're going to I know we've used it for, let's say, a religious school, like a private school, the rule is up to $10,000. So it's not like you can use $50,000 or something, because I know private schools are very expensive. But I'm 99% sure you can use it for that, and it's a $10,000 limit.
Well, here's the other thing, and maybe this is the reason, not to make excuses why I'm not sure where they draw that line. A 529, frankly, if you don't give it some time to accumulate, it's going to be counterproductive, right? Because as we mentioned in the first half of the show, because you're working with government red tape and bureaucracy, the expense drag or the cost, the internal cost to invest in a 529 is probably going to be higher than an IRA or a regular investment portfolio that's not tied to anything like education or retirement plans. So I talk people, Peg, out of contributing to 529s frequently if the kid is already 15 or 16 years old and they're going to start using the money in a couple of years. I think it's counterproductive. I don't think the tax advantage is ever going to, in that short of a period of time, is ever going to offset that increased cost. I think for a 529 to actually work and be efficient, you have to let those funds accumulate probably for at least 10 years, maybe even more like 15 years. So this idea, can I use it for kindergarten or can I use it for elementary school? The answer might be yes, but it might not be a good idea. It might not make sense to do that, even though perhaps legally you can. We'd probably tell you to figure out a different strategy if you're not going to give it more time than that. Denny?
Yeah, one of the things, Bruce, is, you know, remember we can change these beneficiaries. So I just confirm that it is $10,000 per year and it can cover private school tuition. But the bigger thing is there used to be, and you have to check now, because I had a 529 for my kids, and this is long ago, and it was when interest rates were higher, kind of like they are today. So they had a fixed option within the 529 at that time. Now we're talking about, 20 years ago. And it made sense for me to do it, even though she was already in college. So I think they took away that feature, though, because of what I did, right? So a lot of people were just buying that fixed income and then closing out the account. Because if it was 5%, right now we have 5% money markets, but this would have been 5% tax free. So I'll go do a little bit of research on that and come back next week if that is even an option. Bruce?
Denny, do we have time for one more?
I think this would work for the last minute or two. Who can be the beneficiary of the 529? This listener wants, would like to set money aside now for a future child. They ask, can I put it in anyone's name now and change it after the child is born?
Wow, that's such a great question, and it's a good one to close on. So, Peg, this, and by the way, I got to compliment whoever sent in that question to be so proactive that you're thinking about this even before the child is born. Peg, obviously you can't name someone a beneficiary if they aren't born yet, but if you're proactive and you want to plan for a future child, any advice or any thoughts?
Right. You can't list that child, but you can list a beneficiary of any kind. And it's not like you even have to notify the person. Do you know what I mean? So you could take them out, or you probably have somebody that would be willing to put their name on it, knowing that it's going to change when the new child is comes into this world. So very flexible that way. Bruce?
Right. So virtually anybody could be the beneficiary when that child is born, has a name, has a social security number, they're an infant, then you can change them, the beneficiary, over to them. But again, to the texter, I love the proactive plan, thinking about it ahead of time. That's awesome. All right, Danny, I know we're about out of time. Thank you to listeners for your questions, and everyone make it a great day.
Absolutely. And if you'd like to ask a financial question maybe midweek, here's the way to do it. Call toll-free 888-6-ADVICE. Of course, you can always send an email to yourmoney@wealthenhancement.com. But do call if you have a question. 888-6-ADVICE. Email again, yourmoney@wealthenhancement.com. Join us next week for another edition of Your Money.